This is the Awful Announcing Podcast.
Three-pointer.
Oh, Huggins! Double honor!
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, wow! In your life have you seen anything like that?
Oh! LeBron James with no regard for human life!
Welcome to the AA Podcast.
Madden. What are you still doing here?
Here's Matt Yoder.
Welcome into today's AA podcast. NBA veteran, Turner Sports analyst, the great Steve Smith with us. Steve, thanks for taking the time today. Appreciate it.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Tell us, Steve, this is your first year calling tournament games for Turner and CBS. What was the experience like for you being able to be in the broadcast booth for that frantic first weekend of the tournament with such action taking place?
It was totally different. Previously, I've been in studios, which has just been phenomenal, getting a chance to work with everybody. And I would say, just like they call it March Madness, going through the madness and being able to prepare and prep for games, and then, you know, it's a total different experience. Not as many games, but also you have to be right on point and ready for everything. Four games in one night, which made it easy because the games, you know, really tell the story. But I think getting a chance to really watch the teams practice, eight teams practice. So for me, because I love the game so much, you know, I just felt like I was in basketball heaven, get a chance to be around all the great basketball minds and the coaching staffs, but then also to be get around and feel the energy and the passion from the kids. And then obviously, unfortunately, you know, there's a winner, there's a loser, and you see the emotions both ways, from the student section to the fans, and then down to the players, which they pour so much into it. And that's what makes it such an enjoyable time, I think, for the fans to watch, and for me to be a part of it, be a small part of it as a, you know, announcer or analyst, watching the game and just be able to get my insight. Just a fantastic experience for me.
It seems, Steve, that you kind of developed an immediate rapport with Brian Anderson, your mate in the broadcast booth. How did that come together? Was that the first time that you had worked with Brian before? And how did you develop such kind of chemistry from the outset of that partnership in the tournament?
Well, I kind of describe it as, you know, you have some passing point guards, some scoring point guards. You know, Brian is a pass-first point guard, so he really sets the table, puts it in the right spot. Doesn't hold, you know, we were joking at dinner and also at lunchtime. I said, he doesn't hold the basketball. He doesn't pound the basketball. He's so he can work with, yeah, he gives it up and lets you make the decisions, you know what I mean? So he's going to give it up to you early. It's kind of a basketball analogy. But I have worked with Brian before the last two seasons. So I think three seasons we call coaches versus camps for Turner, the basketball turn. And then also when I played for the Spurs, Brian was the radio guy. So we've had a relationship. But not a working relationship until we started to do coaches versus camps.
Okay. It's always interesting, Steve, to see some of the Turner guys, the NBA guys especially, come into March Madness, announce the college games, and really focus on the tournament for this month in March. What is that like for you? What is the research like, the workload? How big of a challenge is it to go into this setting to prepare yourself to call four games in one day with eight teams, and teams that you may or may not have seen in person before that season? What is that process like for you?
I think the process is a lot of work, obviously. But I think if you're doing something you love, it doesn't feel like work. It's just time consuming. But you are definitely elated and happy to be doing it. I think I have an advantage. You know, I love the game, so I'm watching a lot of college games, you know, throughout the year. I think I go back and look at, you know, I played for six, seven different NBA teams. So to be around a game of basketball when I was playing and then know a lot of the kids who are, you know, 11, 12 when I was playing in these cities, get a chance to watch them at high school level and be around them. And then my kids now, they play a lot of travel basketball. So, and then we go watch the older kids. So to be able to know most of the kids, you know, it's obviously a help for me. And also, a lot of the coaches come into the studio when I was doing studio work, so you keep a relationship with those guys. And then, you know, I'm close to Michigan State program, so I'm so close to them all levels of basketball. It's fun to get a chance to watch some of these kids that at least knew, I mean, might not know extensively, but knew their faces, knew their name. And I'm always talking to basketball guys around the country, and people are telling me, be careful, watch out for this kid, he can shoot the basketball. And then I watch basketball so much, especially having two sons who love the game. We sit up and watch games that's not just the big powerhouse conferences. We watch all basketball because we have so many different friends and kids, friends and family members that are playing. So I get a chance to watch a lot of the conferences. And then also I work, I do a little bit of moonlighting in Big Ten Conference throughout the year, so I keep up with that. I'm a basketball junkie, so most of the basketball part is going to be pretty easy. I think it's coming down to for me now, making sure all these schools are moving to so many different conferences. That's the part I think I have struggled with. I just can't get my head around Maryland's in the Big Ten, Missouri's in the SEC, because this, you know, going by nature, no matter how much you study, Missouri doesn't seem like an SEC school to me. You know, obviously everybody, you know, you got to go with teams. It just doesn't roll off the tongue when Syracuse is in the ACC right now. And then I'm just giving you examples of that type of, you know, Notre Dame is not independent no more. They're in the Big East, you know, like an ACC. I'm getting confused already now when you start trying to roll them off. So I think that's the hard part for me, is the movement of the schools in different conferences, whereas, you know, Syracuse was Big East. That's just going to always be implanted in my mind. Maryland was ACC, so that's the part that doesn't roll off your tongue as well. And you've been ingrained for so long that these schools, since I was 7 years old, loving the game, that they've been in these certain conferences, and now they've changed conferences.
Now, that's a brave new world that we live in. And, you know, you mentioned Missouri being in the SEC, for instance. The Wichita State-Kansas situation got a lot of publicity, obviously, with them being in the tournament. But, you know, it's criminal that Missouri doesn't play Kansas anymore in basketball. I mean, some of those rivalries that have been taken away the last 2 years, it's an adjustment for all of us, Steve, I think. And also in there, I think, yeah, what you're saying, what I also heard in there is that you're hoping maybe a few years down the road you might get to call your sons playing the NCAA tournament here before too long.
I obviously I love to be called. I don't want to call none of their games. I mean, too hard on them. So, you know, I'll ask them to take me off their games, and I can just sit in the stands to be there. Or, you know, but calling their games, that's the one I think I'll be nervous to do. Just because it's your kids, and that's when you really want to put the hat on as a dad. So, hopefully they'll be playing one day. But I would prefer not to call them.
That'd be one assignment you might look to go to a different site that year. Another thing you touched on there that I wanted to hit on before we get to the games that you saw in person, obviously your close ties to Michigan State as alum. They're a major story here, once again getting the Sweet 16. And this has kind of been a running theme with this program, Steve, that it seems like every year they enter the tournament as a 6 seed, 7 seed, or 8 seed. I mean, we're accustomed to seeing them in the top 1, 2, 3 seeds, but it seems like almost every year when they come in, and their hopes, you know, you wouldn't expect to be too high, middle range, lower seed, they somehow put a run together. Just how great is Tom Izzo, and how undervalued is he that he can continually do this time and time again with teams that are 6 seed, 7 seed, 5 seeds, 8 seeds, and get them to the Sweet 16 or beyond?
I mean, I think it comes down, you know, I know I'm you know, a little bit better than most, because I was his first recruit. So we have a friendship. We have a assistant coach to player relationship. We have a, now he's the head coach. I didn't play for him as the head coach, but we talk all the time. Just knowing him, and a lot of people say, oh, there we go again. You pick a Michigan State because of your bias. And I go, no, I'm picking Michigan State because I know the long term, you know, from what he does from day one. And it's not, you know, obviously you want to have talent to win games, but it's not so much their talent, because on paper, like this year, people said they might not make the tournament. And he has a type of philosophy that's built to get better at the end of the year. You just go by his scheduling, not afraid to play anybody at the beginning. And a lot of times, you think they've lost. You know, they were, I think, in the top 15 at the beginning of the year. You lose a couple. You know, I mean, the Kansas game, the Duke game. You lost the close game to Notre Dame. This is all before the Big Ten season. So you kind of battle tested. And then if you slip up and lose, I think it was Texas Southern they lost to this year. So then people write you off. He's had a couple of entries, but I think for him is if his team is healthy and he gets a chance to get into the tournament, he's hard to prepare for. And then also, if you give him time to prepare for anybody, he has a game plan ready along with his assistant coaches that the players are going to come out, and it's not so much them making shots. They're going to defend and rebound. And if it comes down to a close game, you have to give the edge to him and his coaching, and that's what you love about what he's done. And then he's passionate about it. He never makes an excuse. He kind of whines to the public, but deep down, there's never an excuse. He expects every team, you know, whether they're a 1 seed or a 16 seed, to get to the Final Four. That's the way he coaches, and that's what he expects. And it's not about putting pressure. He just expects that if we put in the work, and put in our video work and our game and our preparation, we should win.
Let's shift to the games that you saw in person now over the weekend. What's the lasting moment that you'll remember from that pod and the games that you saw? What's the one image that stands out to you from the action that you were able to call in person? I mean, you saw a lot of great games there.
I mean, you know, I was just lucky, and Brian and our crew were so lucky with so many games. I mean, the only, I guess, game that was a blowout was the one Villanova game against Lafayette. But other than that, I mean, just phenomenal games. I mean, DJ Anya's pitching was phenomenal. I thought he even gets him to a chance to get an chance to win. And then for him to catch the basketball to Trevor Lacy and go out with his left hand and then be so candid to talk about it where, you know, the coach said that he never used his left hand. For him to score the basketball, no other shot blocking. So kind of an unsung hero for them. You can imagine a guy like that, not that he doesn't have offensive skills, getting a tip in because of his big size, but being kept the basketball, he gets the free throw line, make the move under that pressure, and to be able to go with his off hand and score against the length and size that he had to go up against in LSU. And then I think for me also is just the little things. I mean, I thought Pat Connaughton blocked shots and his defensive stance at the end of that game against Butler was phenomenal. And I just think all the teams played so well. One of the most unorthodox, efficient, hard-to-guard guy, Roosevelt Jones, playing with his injured knee, to be able to come out and basically almost will Butler to that win the way he played. And then Chris Holtman, the job he's done as the interim coach and now main coach, I think it was in January with Butler, it's just been phenomenal. For all the teams, I mean, and then, kind of a sad note, Mike Bray being able to coach under those circumstances, going to overtime, knowing that, that he lost his mom. And we didn't know as media, lost his mom that morning. You know, for me, you feel for Mike, and also you can pick your hat up for him to be able to hold it together, especially emotionally, and stick with his game plan, with whatever thing he went through. I think that probably be number one for me, just to see him come away with that win, or even get a loss, just to be able to go through that type of game. But obviously coming through that win, I know his emotions have to be going just wild, and for him to be able to keep it under control, that's probably one that I would never forget.
Let's stick with Notre Dame because, to me, Steve, that's a team that has a legit chance to win a national championship that might be flying under the radar. I mean, granted, they're in that Midwest region with Kentucky. You know, they may not have the pedigree as a Duke does, or maybe they gotten the press throughout the season as Wisconsin. But you look at that team, the talent with Grant leading the way, winning the ACC Tournament Championship, getting through that game with Butler, this is a team that is battle-tested. So now to go on, what do you give their chances of, I know they have a tough game against Wichita State now, but let's say they get past that one, maybe. What do you think? Do they have a decent chance to maybe pull off a huge upset against Kentucky? Could this team maybe go further than a lot of people think?
I think for sure, because the reason why is what you said, battle-tested. And I think people go, battle-tested. You just named it. They won the ACC tournament. They won the ACC tournament by beating North Carolina, Duke, and Miami. And Miami is no small people out in 39-39. And then to come in, and that first round game wasn't easy as well. A close game against the Northeastern Huskies that played extremely well. And then they come in and then, you know, play a Butler team that was basically mirror them the way they play as far as defensively and the way they move without the basketball. You talk about battle testing, and they made plays. It was not no lucky shot here and there. They made plays defensively. That was phenomenal.
And it's really interesting, too, that you see Notre Dame and NC State, both from the ACC, but these teams, Steve, that have those close first-round games, you know, Notre Dame got a pretty stiff challenge from Northeastern, but then they were able to power through Butler. Same thing with NC State. I mean, that was a bit of a miraculous win against LSU because they had such help from all the missed free throws at the end of the game. But then they turn around, and they do very, very well against Villanova. And I guess that's been one of the storylines with Kentucky, too. It's almost that, you know, having those close wins for a team like Kentucky that you expect to blow everyone out by 15, 20 points every game, it almost seems that being battle-tested, especially in the early rounds of the tournament, can set you up for some longer-term success.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, and North Carolina State has a team that obviously the trio of guards and, I guess, small guys, wing guys, have played so well for them. It's kind of carried them. But I think in this tournament, like you said, you take North Carolina State's first two games. I mean, they had to battle against LSU's front line, which is no slouch skill-wise and far as time. And then also, you know, turn around and then come in the second game, you know, Malik Abu and also B.J. Ivey in their front court to make plays against the Villanova team where it was small versus big. And obviously, if Villanova ever gets the momentum of the lead, it was going to make Mark Godfrey maybe have to go small and play Villanova style. But those bigs handled their own to make the force Villanova to try to play big or try to play with them. So I think they're starting to get balanced. I think they're always at five. You know, big guys are kind of young and not coming to their home. But I think they're coming to their home and being able to give a team balance. I mean, you have a team that, like the any team at times, that can have balance with this guard play. Good guard play usually can win you a national championship. Like Connecticut did last year, but they have great guard play, and then now they're big, so starting to play the top, and you know, whether they're freshmen and sophomores, you got to add another year when you play two games the way they played in the NCAA tournament. So they have experience now, and I think they're, like you say, battle tested. They could easily make a run and win the whole thing. Even if they have to match up against the Kentucky, because they have some size.
Interesting. Let's stay with Kentucky. Let me get your perspective on this as someone who obviously had a great college career and a very long, very successful NBA career. The conversation is kind of, you know, ebbed and flowed. What would Kentucky do in the NBA? Could they beat the Knicks? Could they beat the Sixers? Could they finish, you know, in the top eight of the Eastern Conference? What do you make of that conversation as a longtime NBA vet, as someone who follows both the pro game and the college game so closely?
I hate to make that comparison. I mean, just the reason, I think it brings light to their team, and obviously in the game of basketball, even having a conversation just tells you how good Kentucky is, and they have time. But I think, in fairness to both the NBA and college, I don't think it should be a comparison. I think you've got to measure Kentucky up against the great teams in the NCAA tournament. And obviously, if they lose a game before they win the national championship, there's no talk about them playing against the NBA team. And even if they win the national championship and run the table, I still think it should be compared at the college level. Because there was some great teams, but they beat the UNLV team that ran the table. And so forth and so on. So I think Kentucky should be measured on a college scale versus we trying to fall forward and blame the NBA in college. I think the NBA is the NBA. You know, college is college, and I think some kind of way we should draw a line between the two and keep it.
If anything, that tells you just how much respect this Kentucky team has that we're kind of forgetting about comparing them to, as you said, you know, the UNLV team, the Indiana team that last went unbeaten. And we're straight into, you know, could they step out on the floor today and win an NBA game? I guess it's just a testament to what they've put together this season. All right, moving back into the studio. Next week, Sweet 16, Elite 8, working out of Atlanta. Tell me, Steve, how excited are you to work with Georgia State head coach Ron Hunter and welcome him into the studio after probably, I'd say that him and his son and everything that happened there with that upset might have been the best story of the first weekend of the tournament.
You know why I'm excited? There I go again, my basketball connection. Me and Ron Howder are good friends. I got a chance, Ron asked me to come in and speak to his team last year when they were trying to make their deal to make the tournament. So we've been close. You know, talked to Ron throughout the year. So excited. Sent him, you know, text messages. I'm pretty sure he had 10,000 of them just to say how proud of I am of him, his son. And just think about that dynamic. Coaching your son, and I'm talking about coaching my son, and literally, you talk about coaching your son at that level and know the six games. And, you know, and obviously, Ron and RJ have done a phenomenal job making this look easy, but that has to be tough. You know, all the emotions going through both those individual minds, but then also give them a lot of credit to get through it, get over it, and then come out and win some games in the NCAA tournament. I mean, that was phenomenal, the game they won, and also had a chance to win their next game. Georgia State has done an unbelievable job of being able to just go out there and watching them conduct practice. It shows you how good a team can be. You learn a lot from watching the way a team goes to practice and how the kids are focused and the way they want to accomplish things. And I think that's what Ron Howder has created, the culture there in Georgia State, where it's a program now that, unfortunately for a lot of those small conferences, that you got to win your conference tournament to get to the NCAA, but they were NCAA team last year. They just lost the championship game. So, proud and happy for Rod, and I'm getting excited and can't wait to see how he's going to get around in the studio. We're going to make a little, have some fun with him, and maybe I'll get me a scooter to try to run around. And we can have a race.
I think Shaq and Charles and Kenny might have something to say about that as well, with getting the scooter out. All right, Steve, tell me, give me one player who you're looking for in the Sweet 16 and beyond who's going to be most important for his team's success. So any player in the tournament, who's that X factor, that player that's really going to define the next 2 weeks here in March and into April?
Yeah, you know, there's so many players, but I think we'll go back to the team we kind of talked about, Notre Dame. I think it's Zach August. I think the way Zach August goes, they're not putting a lot of pressure on the young fellow, is that, you know, he's that big for them that I think as a constant when you run up to some of these things with huge bigs, that he has to be solid, has to stay out of thoughts of, and also hold his own on both ends. So I think for Notre Dame to be able to be that Cinderella story to win it all, I think Zach August is very important to them.
All right, that's a bit of an off the radar answer. I like that. All right, I can't get you out of here without at least one NBA question. So here we are, March 23rd, looking at the rest of the season. Is there a favorite in your mind right now? Have the Cavs done enough since those trades earlier in the calendar year to maybe get favorite status, or is it still either Golden State's or Atlanta's to lose, or maybe one of those other teams from the stacked Western Conference? Who's the favorite right now in your mind?
You know what? That's what's so great about this season. Usually I have a definitive answer and don't mind having it. I picked Chicago early for the Eastern Conference, and then that Western Conference. You know, early on I said the Memphis Grizzlies, but I think that's what's so beautiful. In that Western Conference, you can go anyway. And then you never forget about the San Antonio Spurs. Mm-hmm. At the one point, you try to write them off. And then the Cleveland Cavaliers is interesting. And then people, it's funny how we've been in so many other teams versus the teams that pretty much led the majority of the way on the East, allowing the West side to go to the Warriors.
Yeah.
It comes down to so much as far as injuries and also matchup. But I will say, the Cleveland Cavaliers have my most confidence, but I still wait to see how, you know, Jimmy Butler and Derrick Rose and those guys come back to the end. But they have the makeup talent, you know, defensively and solidly, to win it easily. And then all that Western Conference, I go back and forth between Memphis, San Antonio, and Golden State. So if I said right now, I would get the edge to Golden State, so I would have Cleveland and Golden State. But and then in that game, I would go edge the Cleveland Cavaliers. But you never know.
Wow.
You never know.
And just think, I mean, even to think that you'd say that now, given the way they started the season and the ups and downs. Really a testament to how they've turned that around. Well, we'll save that for late April and May and June. We'll enjoy March Madness and the rest of the tournament while we got it. Steve Smith, Turner Sports Analyst, thanks for joining us today. Follow him on Twitter at Steve21Smith. Pleasure. Keep up the great work, and definitely enjoy that studio experience. And hopefully we'll see you and Coach Hunter break out the scooters here next week.
I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks a lot, Steve.
Thank you.